Copenhagen, Real 16.
You were saying that the Croatians, civilian and soldiers, had begun to form up. They'd formed up into a column, were marching off, and they began to be attacked. Not attacked, but their possessions were stolen as they marched by Yugoslavians, Tito's Yugoslavians. Could you do anything to prevent this?
No. Obviously, they were lining up with their horses, carts, and animals on the road, but it became obvious that this was not to be allowed, and Tito's soldiers got among them and told them to leave everything. They were just like, and those who didn't leave everything were attacked and beaten. There was no actual shooting them out of hand, but shots were being fired to intimidate them, to leave everything, and I didn't understand the language. It was being put to them, you do not take anything with you.
From the valley?
Yes.
At what point did you realise that they weren't going back to the British sector?
Well, not for a while, because there was still about a mile to go before the road branched off. By this time...
So the road branched to the one that went...
Round to Blythe, round the castle.
So that...
The normal road went straight on to Cloudenfoss.
So they were on the right road when they marched off.
And as far as... ...to move off, and where we were standing with the flag and all the show, so and I withdrawn my troops so that they were in full view, and this was in the night.
So you thought they were going to Klagenfeld?
Yeah.
That's what you actually thought at the time. Right, so they carried on marching.
They carried on marching. And by the time they reached where the road branched, some of them had very little water, just packages and so on, and they looked really dejected. To make matters worse, it started to rain, and I think it was really pouring. As it got dark, all the lights of the vehicles were put on, and certainly to show the British flag. And by the time...
So you stayed static? You were still on this hill?
One or two, the brigadier came down, and there was a civilian whom I gathered was an American, something to do with the civilian side of things. I didn't know this at all.
So you weren't accompanying the column at all?
No.
Was there anyone at the head of it?
The Yugoslavs, by that time, had found themselves horses, and they were cracking their whips and chasing them. Now, when the bottom end of the column, and then they were moved off by the Yugoslavs round, past, by through Blyberg village.
So the Yugoslavians were actually policing the column.
Before they were fully in command, we had nothing to do with it.
And it was them that took them off on the Blyberg Road.
Yes.
But that was by agreement with higher-ups.
Yes.
But you didn't actually enforce it yourselves. The British had nothing...
Nothing to do with it. I didn't know how they were going to accomplish this. All I was told that they had agreed to surrender. There wasn't going to be a fighting. And the... troops were to pile up their arms, which were in piles.
Did you not think it was funny that the Yugoslavians were policing the column if they'd surrendered to the British?
Nothing surprised me at that stage.
It was completely chaotic from the sound of it.
Confusing from our point of view.
So
I think the brigadier was standing there with his fingers crossed.
What did he fear would happen?
Well, they were, as you all right. To say what's happening now, they weren't afraid to shoot one another out of hand.
You mean that the whole thing might have blown up into...
Yes, the whole thing would have. I mean, these Tito partisans had lived this life for years, and they were eradicating each other during all this year. And they thought, come to this stage here, we've got a very good shooting target here, we can get rid of more of our enemies.
And they thought the British might be drawn in.
Yes. And I think it upset their plans, the fact that we had come into it. They didn't want that.
So the column was marching out.
So the column. Now, by this time, I think, word passed down that they weren't going straight up to Klagenfurt. Word passed down the column, and then people started to break away from the column, run into the woods, run back towards the border, and that's when there was a certain amount of shooting to get them back. Some of them, of course, escaped, but there were some casualties, as we saw evidence of there, but there wasn't a wholesale slaughter. And so eventually they were...
You could see the panic in the column,
oh,
couldn't
you? Oh, yes. It didn't become organised anymore. The first lot were there, they were singing, 5 soldiers abreast, 5 soldiers, but they had been divested of anything that they were carrying other than what they could carry in their hands. Their horses, their carts, and so on and so forth, which they had brought towards the road, they weren't allowed.
So the head of the column was cheerful enough?
Yes, and they were singing. But then by the time these Yugoslavs were on the horses and racing about with their whips and things, and then forced them round
to Blyberg. And when did you realise what was happening?
Well, not very late. I say we were standing there, with pouring with rain, and somebody said, "I thought we would be going straight up there. Oh no, this is the route they're taking them." Well, I frankly didn't know the geography of the place. I flew to the castle. Nor did I know that in Blyberg the rest of our battalion had come down. And this is where somebody else would have picked up because I hadn't seen the rest of the battalion. I didn't even know they were there. Such was the running backwards and forwards and absolute.
So you didn't understand that road bent back towards the Yugoslavian thing. So even when you knew they were going to Blyberg, it meant nothing to you, didn't particularly?
No.
Who told you that they were going that way?
Well, we could see. These other houses, there were, I think, the brigadier, there was this man from America, a civilian, who was, I don't know, something special about who'd organized, had something to do with the organization, but a civilian, there were one or two other officers, but frankly, as I said, I don't remember. It was so traumatic, the whole thing.
What was traumatic about it for you?
Well, the fact that we were soldiers, we'd done soldiering, and here we were standing spectators. See, all this thing going on, the war had ended, and yet these people were, as I said, when I first went up the river, and I said, yes, I've seen it, he said, don't start the Third World War, and I said, did you not know that the Second World War is still going on? I said, there's heavy fighting beyond where these people are. I said, I can hear that. If they're not field guns, they're tank guns. And of course, this is what had happened. The end of the column had been cut off by Tito, where the Croats had their tanks and their heavy arms.
You mean that, not so much the column, but the crowd that
yes,
had been pouring out of Yugoslavia,
yes.
They'd been cut off.
Cut off, because they did have tanks and guns, and the army was there, but this battle was going on over the border.
Well, that was between the Croatian and the Yugoslavian.
I said to him, when you said, don't start him, I said, did you know that this war hasn't ended yet? And this was days after the armistice.
Now, you could see the column, but you saw people trying to break away. What was the general demeanour amongst the people in the column at the back stages?
Absolute panic.
How did it show itself?
Well, difficult as well. I just put myself there. If I was to be told that something dreadful was happening without knowing what it was, and I saw those woods, and I could get away from it, I would immediately go to the woods. And I think that's what a lot of them were trying to do. But of course, there were too many.
How did you feel about it as you watched? I mean,
well, I'm still sitting to this day.
Did you realise that something wrong was happening?
Oh, yes. I thought, we had fought a war fighting Germans. You were fighting Germans. Germans were fighting. This was warfare. But this, and particularly after we've just been to Greece, where we saw civilians suffering.
Did you know? I mean, you could see there were, when you knew they were going back to, well, Yugoslavia, so to speak. Did you realise they'd be massacred there?
No, I didn't know.
But you still thought it was wrong.
I knew Tito was getting something that we didn't want him to have. This was what was wrong, and this is what we fought for. And here's this man who'd been hailed as a hero, was just getting his own way by sheer force of not so much help from the Russians, but the Russians weren't holding him back, and he was just tearing up all the factions he wanted. Yugoslavia for the communists, and this is what he was signaling. So anyone who disagreed, who were being wiped up bit by them, village by village.
Now the Croatians had sided with the Germans. Did you have it? But you still had sympathy for them, or didn't you even know?
Sympathy for civilians. Now that the war was over, I didn't know who had a gun in their hands or anything. You know, it was beyond our. We were just soldiers, and we'd fought eyeball to eyeball. But this the civilians was terrible.
Did you make any representations that something should be done, or did you? Could you? But at the time,
do you want me to tell you that?
I do. Could you? Do you think you could have done anything different? I mean, even if you tried to.
No, we were totally outnumbered.
So
also, my instructions were not to do anything provocative unless we were personally attacked. There was my instructions.
There was nothing you felt you could do anyway.
Nothing I could do. We're very sympathetic for these people who came, said, I'm a professor, I'm a doctor, me, I'm a particular learner. Nothing we could do for them.
And even when you saw them being shot, or, you know, them running away and the shooting in the woods, you couldn't intervene because...
There were so many. There were so many of them.
The Yugoslavians.
Yes.
So what happened next then? As the column wound past...
Well, we stood there miserably in this rain and watched them all go. It took hours and hours. And next morning, there was all the... A lot of the debris and all the carts and even motor cars had been removed. And there were still horses running about. And I got a message to say from the local farmers whose land they had been on, could we collect these horses that were eating their crops? So our chaps were delighted to round up the horses. So that was the first thing. Of course, there was a lot of rubbish lying around, and I went up to see the brigadier again, and he said something about the war. I said, I don't even know where the war is. Now, there's a young lady there, and she was the daughter of the count, whose castle it was. The son had been acting as interpreter and very useful for them, and he was taken on the staff for bringing their Scott as an interpreter. But this girl, who I probably hadn't been there before, well, she said, I will show you where the border is. So I chucked her, and she was a young girl, probably 16 or something. So I said to the brigadier, is that all right? Oh, yes, he said, that's all right. So I said, good, it'd be nice to be sure what is what. So, I always had two people in the back, or one, a driver, and as I say, two people in the back, shotgun. So she came down to where the crowds had been, and she took me up a side road to start with, where the farmers were doing, because it was their land, to see the damage and get the horses back. And then we came back, and we went along the road, and there were these great piles of arms, and we had a good look round, and we saw one or two graves, which I didn't pay much attention to. we went down to the border where the Bulgarians were, and then, of course, again, there were still crowds up on it, but in other words, this, our area had been cleared. And she was very charming and pointed out where the border was and about the farm. And so, of course, the troops were astonished when I appeared in front of this young girl, but she spoke good English. So she then saw what was left. What were her views? I don't know. We didn't see anything there. But I learned later from the people who'd done this inquiry that she is living in Vienna. She remembered it. She hadn't been, of course, brought into any of this inquiry. But I was particularly asked if I could give my detailed account so she could cooperate, and which she did. So that was my little thing. This is why they wrote a note in the Jungle Book to thank me for my thing. But that was the only official, if it was official.
Now, why couldn't they have just, I think it's obvious, but why couldn't they have just made them turn the whole lot back and put them back up the valley across where the Bulgarians were? That would have caused a mass fight, would it?
The Russians were there on the other side with them. See, Tito was just being a right nuisance to the Allies. The Russians didn't want to, anything to do with them, although they thought Yugoslavia would be turned communist, but they really weren't openly backing him. And he was just a nuisance, and he was claiming the Russians knew that it was in the Yalta agreement that they would not get Carinthia back, which they said was theirs, nor would they get parts.
So that wouldn't have served his purposes to have them driven back up towards Bulgaria. He wanted them back into Yugoslavia.
Where he would see he had two divisions waiting. And, of course, if you read further into history, a lot of them were massacres and there was a huge grave, but this doesn't...
That's not what you saw. So the last you saw of the column was it leaving to go to Blyberg, where the story can be picked up by members of the other two companies.
Yes.
And that's the last you saw of them.
From there, and the reports that appeared, Colonel Warren had made his report, and saying these people were being marched back to Maribor, which was 53 miles, I said at one time, just standing there, will these people be fed? And I think I got the answer, that's not our business.
So the Yugoslavs continued to provide the guard?
Yes, so, but they said they took them back to Maribor, which was 53 miles away. But that is in my CEO Colonel Warren's report. I didn't know anything about that.
So how did this detachment come to an end to the Irish Brigade?
Obviously, the Irish Brigade, they had come there, they'd been detached from 78th Division, which were running camps for the Cossacks, and they were widely spread. But the Irish Brigade had been brought to Blyberg in an emergency. I think the Brigadier didn't make a mistake, but he saw this lovely castle standing above there and thought that was great. Also, he wanted to make a nice brigade headquarters, and he established himself there. But of course, his troops had to be whisked away some miles away to deal with the Cossacks and the Germans and other affairs. So he was left with no troops apart from his little brigade headquarters.
And how long did you stay with him after the Croatians had left?
Just one, I think, on the. I think it's the 17th.
So this incident had taken place from when you arrived on the 14th, the evening of the 14th, where you first got to see the column. And then the column was made up on the 15th and was going through the night and into the 16th when the last of the column went for you to leave on the 17th.
By this time, the soldiers were forced, when they were over this, ostensibly clearing up, rounding up forces, but they were thoroughly enjoying themselves now that the tension was passed. And then we got an order that we had to go through Dyerberg to join up with the rest of the battalion, which somehow, I don't know why I got to move over there, but it answered the question because I had never seen my commanding officer. I was working purely with the brigadier and also with this Major Morn of the Norfolk Recce, who was super to have with one share of all the great support. But we just talked about ourselves, so it was a little committee decision what we did. We all agreed that was the best thing, the action we took.
So you rejoined the battalion at Blyberg?
Yes.
And what happened then?
I understood that immediately we had gone, the Irish Brigade were moved back to their division. We joined the battalion, and the next job was moving northwards, where we took the surrender of the 369 German division. But we were given billets, and I was lucky that we were at a railway.
Was that up to Bruckel?
Bruckel,
sorry.
So we joined there, and life was obviously a little more pleasant. My company got into a small farmhouse. The men were in two railway sergeants, which was the end of the line. And I think the next job we were given was to round up the Cossack horses. The Cossacks were to surrender. Well, they had surrendered, but they were to be put in prison cages. And I think B Company was in charge. The Royal Engineers had made these cages.
So B Company guarded the Cossacks?
Yes.
And A Company was doing the horses again, rounding up the horses?
We had to give up our horses. We couldn't take them with us. So
the horses from the Croatians, you lost?
Yes.
And now you're getting another lot?
Yes. So word got down that A Company had been very good with the horses. So we were given the task of supervising the collection of the horses from the Cossacks. And it's been nice to find where work was done. And there was a special Cossack regiment, which I hope somebody else will tell you about. Of course, I was still a bit knocked out with the Yugoslavs, and I really wasn't much interested in anything. The Cossacks weren't my job. And I was told that my company would be responsible for the horses. So this Tomanov Brigade put on a great show. They came down with their horses. They were mounted and with their uniforms, and all our higher officers who were huntsmen and cavalrymen were very impressed with their horsemanship. So they came down with a lovely glade, and were the best of the horses. The Royal Engineers had put up photos where the horses were taken, and A Company again had horses. Well, no sooner than everybody saw these horses that a lot of people wanted to be a squadron, particularly the colonel, second command, one, 2 hours. Now, in this little farm I was, the farmers were very glad that the British had come and the Germans had gone, and they had really nothing left in this little farm, and I saw they had stores where they had characters. So, third kind, as I said, would you like a horse? And yes, I'd like a horse. So when I looked, they had a place for two horses. So I'd seen these horses coming, some were very good, and I saw a matched pair. door and we can mission. So I got this match pair for them and took them to this farmer and gave them a present of these two houses. Well, word got round about the horses. I wasn't concerned. They had been taken from the Cossacks. So people were coming from other regiments, even from Italy. Could they have some horses? Sure. No. Don't know what I'm going to do with them. So lots of people got horses. Even our battalion got horses, and we built on that, and they made wiring rings and had a race course. And meanwhile, a Hungarian band had been among the people who let it surrender. So we kept the Hungarian band, we made the race course, the band played, and we had a race meeting. But then someone else will tell you more about that.
Were you much interested in riding yourself?
Well, when we took the surrender of the 369 German division, which C Company had to do, I had a good pal looking after me. He asked me to go over. And he said, I believe you're going to take the horses over. And there was a full colonel, German, magnificent figure on this magnificent horse. And he was attending to everything. You could always do things the German says, you know, say what you want. So I said, I would like that horse when you're finished with it. Yes, how many are? He said, he spoke English. He said, it does not jump very well, just 1 meter. I said, I don't want it to jump. He looked magnificent on it, and that kind of special saddle cloth which obviously pinched him. So anyhow, I got that and I named it Dunelmian, after Durham. So I had that, and a while later when all the other Cossack hats were coming in, and some of our chaps were very good at jumping. So I thought, I saw a horse that jumped well. I thought, well, I may as well have a horse that jumps well. So I got another horse and I called him Bobby. So we had absolutely not to do this, but we had a race meeting. And
tell me about the race meeting.
Well, we had officers who had ridden horses before.
Had you?
No. But by that time, I was never off a horse's back, and so we had gone on very well. There was the first race meeting, and there was betting, and these people who knew about these things set it all up, and I was a firm favourite to win. I've never been in a race before. Anyhow.
What type of a race was it? Just flat or?
Flat race. No jumping on this one. And anyhow, it just shows how we were relaxing. And so I went into the race, and I never knew that horses could throw up so much dirt. I just had no ordinary army hat on, but I was getting knocked out by the clods coming up from the horse. Anyhow, my own horse made its way out, more concerned about saving my face from these clods coming from another horse. Anyhow, in the end, I let the horse took its own way and just narrowly lost. So I wasn't very popular. They said, well, you have the thing in your hand. I said, yes, but I've been mucked thrown out. I can't think. But we had a horse mania.
Did you do any jumping races?
No. I didn't do jumping.
So you were getting all these horses. Who was looking after them all? I mean, you have to clean horses, feed them, the rest of it.
We were there, and the Cossacks, of course, were looking after them themselves. And then we had to hand them over to the Russians.
Now, this is a similar thing, in a sense, because they'd fought with the Germans, the Cossacks. They didn't want to go back to the Russians, I believe. I mean, what do you remember of that handover? Were you as involved, or was this more other...
I wasn't. But this was the main trouble, handing over the Cossacks to the Russians. The that's another story entirely. I've studied it since and looked into it because I'm very interested. And not a very happy story. There was people were forced to repatriate and put into Catholic trucks and so on and so forth. But that's another story.
Did
I
you
only know that we had about 3,000 Cossacks passing through our hands daily. They weren't kept that long in the cages. As soon as they got in the cages, they set up makeshift bivouacs, but they weren't kept there very long.